This is Digital Dave.
And I'm Fast Eddie.
And you are listening to EAA Radio. We're joined this morning by Mikey McBrien, General Manager of Buffalo Airways.
Hi, guys.
A new up-and-coming enterprise, I understand.
Yeah.
A town called Yellowknife, Canada?
Yellowknife, Northwest Territories, Canada. We're not even a province, we're a territory.
Wow. How many people live in Yellowknife?
It's seasonal, from 16,000 to about 20,000. So literally there's more people outside the door here than there is in my hometown.
There's more people in the campground than in your hometown.
Yeah, for sure. And total, the whole, like, it's only about 42,000 in the Northwest Territories. There was 10 times that at the Chicago concert or the other night.
Yeah, oh, no
that
kidding.
Was a good concert, too. Anyway, you guys operate an airline, and it has the distinction of being one of the last airlines that still flies regularly scheduled DC-3s, among other older aircraft.
Yeah. And we are the last year-round daily passenger service of the DC-3. In fact, we're the longest, too. We've been doing it nonstop since 1982. We only take Christmas Day off and New Year's Day. But besides that, every day we were flying.
Well, you're not just flying passengers, you're flying cargo as well.
Yeah, in the territories, cargo and passenger are basically the same. Sometimes, you know,
the cargo complains less, right?
Yeah, you can kick a cargo, but you can't kick a passenger.
What is the strangest cargo that you've ever put in a DC-3?
I can tell you the best. About 2 months ago, we got to carry the Stanley Cup.
Nice.
So we had a whole DC-3 with the Stanley Cup. And if you're not familiar with hockey, Stanley Cup is the Holy Grail.
That's right.
It's basically,
what makes it unique is it's a traveling trophy.
Yeah, it's a traveling trophy. The Cup Cops, they loved the airline. They loved the TV show and the airplanes. And both Cup Cops usually only travel individually. They both came with us. And we got 3 days with it. You know, it was sitting in the co-pilot's chair. Sitting in the flight attendant's chair, all strapped in.
Did it earn its wings?
Yeah. It's amazing. So we got to spend 3 days with it flying around, and it was easily the best cargo.
Oh, nice. You're constantly flying the plane lightly loaded. That's got to be a dream.
Yeah.
Well, you know, one of the other things you got to be aware of is the fact that you guys are way up close to the Arctic Circle. What kind of weather headaches do you have with a regularly scheduled airline?
Well, the funny thing about the weather there is that it's virtually a desert climate. We're in the tundra. So basically we get 2 weeks in the spring, 2 weeks in the fall that are, I guess, what you would call normal weather here, you know, flurry, snow, freezing rain, that kind of stuff. But besides that, it's just basically living in a deep freeze. You can imagine living in your freezer, the weather really doesn't change. It's cold tomorrow, it'll be cold yesterday.
Well, define deep freeze. What's average temperature, minus 30?
In the winter, you're going to be looking between like minus 20 degrees Celsius would be a normal weather day, like a normal winter day. In fact, you would be outside with your lightest jacket at that point, going down to minus 40 degrees Celsius, which that's the famous where the 40 Fahrenheit and 40 Celsius.
That's right, where they cross over.
Not only that,
Parkerland.
That would be considered life-threatening weather as well, wouldn't it?
Yeah, for sure. People do die every year by exposure, and you really every time you open a door, you basically have to have a plan in your head what you're going to do, because it's not like, hey, let's go outside and have a smoke. It's basically that smoke may be your last. It sounds dramatic, but if you know people sometimes if they have a little bit too much alcohol. And they go for a smoke.
They don't come back.
Yeah, they're done.
Well, there's another instance of smoking killing people.
Yeah, exactly.
No kidding.
Now, let's talk about the airplanes. You land at a remote strip. You're delivering a charter, run a cargo, whatever. How do you keep those engines warm so you know they'll restart? You just leave them run?
Yeah, in a lot of situations, we leave them running. Or the boys tell me that if you got about half an hour, you can shut them down for about half an hour, and the residual heat would be okay. But you know, any moment, like minutes after that half an hour, you're running into troubles. So they'd go really quick. The half an hour is even if you run out and you tent them. So you run out and you get an engine tent. You know, it's basically just like a sleeping bag for your engine. And you put it in. But then you can put ceramic heaters in, you plug them in. And then it's good for overnight. But then you got to babysit the airplane, because just like your house, if you put too much power in it, you're going to break a breaker.
Mm-hmm.
And
there goes your engine heat.
Yeah, you're done. If you're familiar with the TV show, season 2, the first episode, they go up to Joe Haven, which even for me is remotely in North, and they happen to break a breaker. So you get to see it takes, even for 6 hours of cold, it takes 24 hours to warm it up with Herman Nelson heaters.
Now that's, wow, something I would not have thought about. That brings to mind, what's your average leg flying length, that kind of stuff?
Just where we are, there's no such thing as really average. It everything changes so often. I think with the aircraft we have, we're limited because we have to run AVGAS 100 low light, where the predominant fuel up there is, you know, jet fuel for basically everything. At the temperatures, they can actually burn just house fuel, like heating oil. And a lot of them, you can even put AVGAS in it just for the trip home if it's an emergency. But so basically, we have to carry our own fuel. So you could say the DC-3, you're looking at about, say, 600 miles one way, and then we can bring enough fuel to come back. We bring our own drums and stuff. The 46, you're looking about 800 miles. DC-4, about 1,000 miles.
So you're giving up a significant amount of cargo because you got to haul fuel.
Yeah, and that's a testament to these airplanes, is not only are you hauling a decent load, but you're hauling your own fuel. And your still price per pound is very, very competitive with the newer aircraft.
Well, you know, you're flying older aircraft here. What about the reliability of the aircraft? How does the cold affect that?
Buffalo Airways started in May 1970, so we're 40 years old. So we got the experience. Some of these guys have been doing it their entire lives. If we didn't have that, it would be more of a nightmare than it usually is. It's just routine. You check, you double check in everything, because at that temperature, anything can happen. Regardless if you're in a brand new A380 or if you're in the 170, it's the same problems. Just magnified.
Well, yeah, you had to research even all the way down as far as greases for controls that won't thicken up at at minus 40.
Yeah,
that's a lot of little details you wouldn't necessarily think about.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, you know, you have canvas covered surfaces or fabric surfaces on the DC-3s. How does the cold weather affect that?
Everything becomes brittle. It's almost the metal is the problem, because it gets really, really, really brittle. You handle everything like eggs. It's just, it's almost second nature. I can't handle the heat. It's almost like, you know, around here, you're like, hey, let's go take the cowling off. And like, you burn your hands. It's almost the opposite where you burn your hands because it's cold. So the people we have working on these airplanes prefer the cold weather way over the hot weather. It's kind of weird. It's kind of too extreme.
So that's kind of the person you're looking for.
Yeah, yeah.
The person that really likes the cold.
Yeah, you want the snowman, basically.
Yeah, basically.
Are they hard to find?
Yeah, yeah. You really have to breed them, and they really have to love them. It's definitely not a 9-to-5 job.
Well, here's the thing. You guys have got to have self-rescue capabilities, because if you pop an engine somewhere, or, you know, have a flat tire or some kind of mechanical issue with the plane, you got to be able to take spare parts, tools, mechanics, and survival equipment up to where the stuck airplane is to get that thing fixed and back in the air.
For sure.
That's got to be a major headache.
Yeah, it's virtually impossible to run one airplane. You got to have backups for your backups. We have to have DC-3s ready to go.
Almost like an alert fighter fleet, you know?
Really?
Yeah, for sure.
On a moment's notice.
How many DC-3s do you have?
We have 12 in total, but we have 6 that we operate constantly going through the bar and getting fixed, like doing their regular maintenance. So we, at any given time, we can have 3 that the pilot can jump in and fire up, 4th and 5th and 6th
one. So you keep them fully fueled. You got to have some sort of emergency kits on board that are the type that are going out to help someone. And then whatever parts you know you need up front.
Yeah, basically, a good analogy would be is every time you take off the airplane, you can pretend you're going back in time way before there's any ground support or equipment. So everything in the airplane, the airplane has to go out like it's going back in time where you had no resources. So you bring your cylinders, you bring your tools, you bring everything with you. And
I also imagine you bring weapons to handle animals.
With the recent regulations, they really frown.
They
upon
frown them. Upon that. Okay.
So we just try to hit them with the prop.
that's a little bit of a mess.
Oh, sorry, PETA.
Yeah, exactly. Well, he was on the runway, and I had to run away.
Oh, look, tenderized, fresh dinner.
Yeah, there you go.